Our latest production, alongside the team at 22 Hours, is here. And for this one, we wanted to answer one big question. How does a country at the tip of Africa become back-to-back Rugby World Cup champions and the greatest ever rugby nation? The key is one of the most robust but difficult sporting pipelines in the world. Let's take a deep dive into the journey from schoolboy to Springbok. From bustling cities to remote villages, young boys with dreams of rugby glory navigate a system fraught with challenges and opportunities. Schoolboy rugby has thrived in South Africa for over 150 years, and some derbies put professional sports to shame, drawing over 20,000 watching fans. To understand the schoolboy to Springbok pipeline, we begin in Easter and festival season.
You talk a lot of nonsense with your mouth!
With your mouth!
Who's going down in the mouth?
With your mouth!
There's a lady, and it's an Easter!
An Easter!
It's again an opportunity to get boys to play, for universities to come out. This is where boys also just get that sort of lifeline. There might also be a lot of franchise recruiters coming through. The competition is very, very, very strong.
And it's changed compared to our times. As I said, it costs money to be part and parcel of this. But something else has changed. I mean, I've got a young daughter, and I think something like super sport schools makes it easy for us parents to see, even the kids get interested.
It's a widely held belief that the South African schoolboy rugby setup is the most professional in the world. The success this brings attracts sponsors, and one such school is Paul Roos Gymnasium, which has over 30 sponsors, more than most professional teams. But there's another side to this pipeline, where passion and talent are held back by circumstance.
Schoolboy rugby is strong in South Africa. It's well supported, it's well tracked. We're probably the best running sort of structure in the world. The amount of players that we are developing is just incredible. And I'm sure there is some sort of a stat where there's about 900 players, South African players playing overseas professionally. And that's just the state of the health of where we are and how good that is for competition, yeah.
There's two sides to the system. There's the great side of the system, which is systematically built, it's well supported. And then on the other side of the system, the black player perspective, the stories that should be impossible.
You got to realize how many Makazolas missed out, how many has got so close. Tiger Mangweni, when you talk of a Makazole, sort of say there's been who comes so close. Kumani Boy. I met Kumani Boy, couldn't pass on the left-hand side. And I said, no, but you got to pass this way. You know, so Tiger, anyway, asked for a lift. The bus drops us off in town. And I had a normal car. Jolonga is the place. And I drive from East London town. I realized, like, boss, my car won't make it up there now. We've done the dirt road, so up there won't make it. Gets up the car, says, oh, and you see that little light there? That's where my house is at. So Makazole makes it at the back end of thousands who've come so close. Thousands were shut down by the system. And shutting down by system could be language. I mean, I get to the Lions, the lineouts were in Afrikaans. I told them straight, so the boys were carrying Afrikaans. It's just not going to happen. I will never understand. I can't. You make a call, I almost got to translate and throw. It's just not going to happen.
You cannot even go to play other. There's a problem of infrastructure. The cars cannot go to another area because the roads are soil, so the roads are bad and poor. And if they're going to play in some other, then you have to provide food for them because it's a disadvantage. Very well, that you see.
In the Makazole Mapimpi story, there's some really unique people in his story who did see his talent early on, and he was very lucky to be exposed to those people, even though that he wasn't in a very traditional rugby environment at all. He was still exposed to people who had a great passion for the game and who also understood and saw his talent. And I think that is important in any way in life, you know, whether it's athletics, whether it's, you know, whatever sports we speak about, it's, you know, being exposed to someone who has the ability to see your talent and understand, you know, what it is that makes you special.
In 1999, the South African government tried to equalize the system and compel the unions to provide opportunities to players of color by implementing quotas. Between 2015 and 2019, these transformation targets have steadily risen from 30% to 50% of the Springboks being players of colour.
Firstly, your thought on the system as a player having been trying to go through that system, being called a quota player maybe. And then on the other side, was it a crutch that many used to leave the country to say, I can't play because of quota systems, or were they really just not good enough to play in the first place?
The only guy I'd say left definitely was there was Tian Strauss. Tian competed with Francois for the captaincy, leadership of the Springboks, goes and plays for Australia. Everyone else after that could have, should have. Coaches. The easy escape was that, but it's a quota system. So I couldn't tell you straight, listen, boss, you haven't got it. So the bailout for coaches was that. So you're telling me everybody left was a winger? You know, you pack up and you leave. Where do you go? So give me a player who packed up, left, went to New Zealand, made it. Yeah, so for me, it was an excuse. When you take all those players that have left and currently go toe-to-toe with the current Springboks, black, white, green, yellow, where do they fit on game day? You sitting at home as a genuine rugby person, I say pick a team. But you could come from the right is of right, the left of left. What's in front of you, chances are you wouldn't pick off the players that left. Fact. Yeah.
In 2016, research on registered rugby players in South Africa found that there were over 400,000 players, with the majority of these players being people of colour. The pipeline is changing to include many more players from previously disadvantaged areas. An investment in these areas from funders such as FNB is bearing fruit.
FNB Classic Clashes Festival, which we've piloted in the Eastern Cape, and we're trying to get that model right. And that gives the opportunity to under-resourced schools in the Eastern Cape from all across the Eastern Cape. We've already had two players who were scouted by universities, so they've literally gone from the Classic Clashes Festival into Varsity Cup, into Varsity Shield. We've also had one player who was selected straight by the union into the SA under-20s.
You know, if you look at a World Cup squad, you know, Makazola, Marnie Leibach, Lokanya Arm, various others, I mean, in fact, more and more in that Springbok setup don't come from these traditional environments, and we're still catching that talent. And I think that's testament to the school system, the breadth of the festivals and the events that are taking place. At the end of the day, what you want is kids participating, getting the chance to play. If you have any idea about what talent looks like, or whether you're a coach or a selector, when you see it, you know what you see, you know. So we've just, the Super Sport Schools partnered with Lincoln Marley on a wonderful festival down in the Eastern Cape, Nsondile Marley Rugby Tournament, which they've just operated. And it's really about township and rural schools, kids that ordinarily just don't get a chance at all to participate in festivals and events. And off the back of that, they've chosen, I think, 23, 25 that are going to travel to the United Kingdom on a three-week tour, go and play clubs and various other institutions over there. So there's no foolproof way. There's no way that you're always going to put the talented kid in front of the right person at the right time in life. There's, you know, and I think that's true of any sports system in the world. You know, that's, at the end of the day, there's a bit of luck involved in all of these things. But we don't do a bad, you know, we don't do the best job. But we actually don't do a bad job, because we still keep finding these gems all the time.
So, I mean, obviously FNB can't solve everything in rugby, but I think what has been put in place is really effective, and you can see it in the results. I mean, over 100 just from Classic Clashes Springbok players, 54 Springbok players out of Varsity Cup and Shield. And I think that in itself is already a successful pipeline, regardless of what SA Rugby is doing and everybody else is doing as well. We definitely have our eye on the prize all the time, and that's to move somebody from a clash of school into a varsity space, not just to be a rugby player. Obviously, everybody can't be a Springbok, but to have these youth leave university financially savvy, with that discipline and the determination that being a sportsman or sportswoman gives you.
According to the National Education Infrastructure Management System, 37% of South African schools have football facilities, compared to just 5% with rugby. So why, with more players to choose from and better access, can football not achieve the same success?
Football is 10, 20 times bigger than rugby. So there's just so many kids playing it. So yes, it is, just because of scale, it is much more difficult. Look, football's had an interesting relationship with schools and with, you know, the education market in this country. And you know, there was a wonderful organization going back, I don't know, 10, 15 years, Schools Football. which I think was doing a fantastic job. SAFA got involved, and for whatever reasons, I don't really understand what happened there, to be quite honest. And I'm sure there's somebody much better positioned that could explain that. That was taken out the system, and they largely saw football as a club game. You know, I think one of the beauties of the rugby system is that club and schools, etc., sort of operate within one ecosystem, although probably largely dominated by schools. In the football sense, it's largely dominated by club.
One club in South Africa is an outlier and continues to produce top-tier football talent for the league and the national team, despite not having a schoolboy system to work from.
Clearly, the source board has to be given to the coaching staff at work, tirelessly with the players behind us. We all are one. We're one family. And there's no coach that's his own team. We understand the process of the club, and each player belongs to the club. And our job is to make sure that each player goes through the processes to get to the top. It's an holistic take on as a club, because we believe there's a football aspect, there's a fitness aspect, as well as a cultural aspect as well that has to come together. We don't just teach the kids to play one style, and I think that's important. Unfortunately, the other clubs, they have their specific styles, and our players are adaptable. Right? And that's why we had so many players at previous national teams as well, and that's why teams come and buy our players. Currently, we've had 8 players called up to the under-20 national camp as well. And that shows that we're doing something right. 8 players, it's a pat on the back to the coaches behind us. Could you get 8 players called up? That's huge for us. Super Rugby and cricket has been developed over decades. The cultures and the upbringing has been basically over years. South African football at school level, we're not that involved. There's not that structure. And personally, my belief is that the club system is already up and running in South Africa, and there should be more emphasis from the national body in improving the club system and putting in standardization. So calling SuperSport United, we're one of the PSL clubs, we have to hold a specific standard. So call it A, B and C. So to get to an A level, if the SAFA has X amount of money, the A level academies get X amount of money from the body because of their production of players. And if you look at Europe, I think they work that way, especially the UK. I think their academies are standardized to A level, B level and C level, and they get reassessed. If they don't keep up to certain standards, they drop levels, which means they lose money. And obviously those clubs would want to stay up to those levels, so they keep producing, improving the technology, health, nutrition, diets, education of players. That becomes important. Look, it's an investment thing. I think we need to get bigger sponsors that are able to support and supply the clubs and the national body to improve the quality of football.
The Springbok pipeline, though imperfect, with ample room for growth, proves challenging to replicate. Its success, intertwined with South Africa's unique sporting culture, highlights the complexity of nurturing talent from schoolboy rugby to the international stage.
We've got big gaps in our system, there's no doubt. We're not going to catch everyone. It's not going to happen. And we're also not going to catch them at the right time. You know, something about catching talent is, one is you've got to see it, but you also need to see it at the right time when you can do something about it, nurture it and do those sort of things.
You don't get to where you get to with our talent. The biggest thing for them is that rugby was sort of the escape route, and the only way of making it big in life, you need to marry that with hard work, you need to marry that with commitment, you need to marry that with staying focus driven on what you want to achieve. I think they've probably laid a platform for those non-traditional, you know, playing schools in the country. I think if you come from those schools, if you make it, you're probably very, very lucky. But if you can just have married the talent with the hard work, you'll come through. You'll achieve all of the dreams that you've ever wanted to.
It's clear that the Springbok pipeline is a beast in and of its own, with ups and downs and unique quirks. While it's not flawless, replicating its success is easier said than done. And as we've seen, it's not just about numbers and facilities. It's about heart and soul, which South Africans have plenty of.